Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. Michael Shine, host of the popular podcast Access to Anyone, continues to interview David Schreiner Kahn as we move forward with the miniseries Fire Your Business Coach. David and Michael have talked about finding the right community, but what if you just can't find it? Well, that means it's probably time to start the community yourself. Listen as David talks about the kinds of people you should look for.
In terms of the kinds of people who should make up this new model of community, particularly like business / professional community, one of the aspects that is likely to make a community stronger is having a narrow focus. So think about what happens in marketing. If you have a narrow focus, it's easier to attract and acquire new customers. And the same thing with a community. If the community has a narrow focus, then it's more likely to attract and acquire members who meet a particular profile. You know, so some examples of communities, I mentioned B&I is designed for people who benefit from both giving and getting word of mouth marketing. Now that's somewhat narrowly defined, but there are a lot of businesses that gain benefit from word of mouth marketing. You know, not every business works that way, but a lot of businesses do. So it's defined, but it's not super narrow. If you look at a community like Podcasters Paradise, which is a community created by John Lee Dumas, who's the host of a really successful business podcast, that community is both a community and learning library for people who want to start and or improve the hosting of a podcast. So they're a relatively small number of people who are either hosts of an existing podcaster who want to start one. But you can be sure that the people who are part of Podcasters Paradise are going to focus on creating value for their fellow members around any issues they face with regard to podcasting. So in sum, you've got to know who should be served in the community and what problems they have. You should also know what kinds of relationships will help solve those problems and what kind of information will help solve those problems. Additionally, it's important to know how the information can be communicated. And lastly, what I discussed earlier about the facilitation and leadership is really important to help keep people who are in the community moving forward and making progress. You'll see if there isn't a feeling of progress, and again, I'm emphasizing the word feeling, if there isn't a feeling of progress on the part of the members, you will see the members start to drop out.
Why are you emphasizing the word feeling? Talk to me about that.
We're social animals, and you look back at over the course of human history, there was the development from individuals who may have been gatherers and hunters to tribes that were gatherers and hunters, and people learned that they could do a better job of gathering and hunting if they did it in tribes. And then there was the camaraderie that came along with it. And as human development has gone on over the millennia, we've gotten much more and more sophisticated in how we interact with one another. I don't think the planet could support 7 billion people if we weren't social animals. And so this, it's not just the sort of the physical and tactical benefit that we get from one another. Most people, and if you look at kind of what's going on in the world today in terms of the interest in being part of communities, most people want to be part of a community where they feel like they are both contributing and gaining something in return. And again, that's a feeling. It's not, I don't think it's an absolute. I think it's very hard to actually measure. One of the things I've asked people as an example who are, because I was a member of B&I for a number of years, one of the things that I've asked people who are members of B&I is, how do you like being a member of B&I? And people who've been in it for a long time say they really love it. And there are some people who are in it who don't actually get a lot of business from it. And I've asked them point blank, like, how much of your business do you get from B&I? And there are some people who are in it who say very little. But they like being in it because they like being in a room with like-minded people once a week. It makes a huge difference to how they behave and how they feel and how it kind of colors their week.
But what I hear you, or I should say, and what I hear you saying is not so much that if you can have a group that's all about feelings, but there's no actual tactical process, I don't think anyone is arguing that that's good. But I think what you're cautioning against, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the discounting of feeling. That you're, if you're in a tactical scenario that lacks the feeling of progress, that's not good either. Am I hearing you properly?
You hear me absolutely 100%. If there's a community that is totally focused on tactics and has no feeling whatsoever, it's not going to be a great community. They're not going to make a lot of progress. On the other hand, if it's all feeling and no tactics, people will feel good probably for a while, but they're never going to get anything done. You know, you look at why do companies do these team building exercises, right? You initially hire people because they have the skills and experiences to perform tactics that are going to create greater success for the company. But eventually you realize you mix these people in a company together for a while, unless you give them something that will give them the feeling of wanting to support one another in their work, you're going to have lackluster performance. So companies will invest a lot of money in these, you know, offsite team building exercises where they spend a lot of time working on feelings and working on camaraderie, because we know that that's a really important ingredient to success in an organization.
So the trick for the professional is to simulate that in an environment without, you know, the resources to do that, so to speak.
Yeah, really great business communities that are supportive of the individual businesses that are members. In lots of ways, they end up simulating what happens with a great team that's inside a company. You know, if you have a community that has, let's say, a dozen different businesses that are part of it, in one group, those dozen businesses are all working for their own individual profits. But if they are in a community where the community is very supportive, collectively they can do a lot better than they can do on their own. And again, it doesn't feed the collective bottom line, except if you tally up the individual bottom lines.
That sounds like a great stopping point. Do you have anything else on these chapters?
I do, actually. If you're trying to create a community, you can go through the exercise of defining what the community should look like and what it needs. And you can also go through the exercise of trying to find people who have those characteristics. But there are a few really interesting characteristics that are part of communities that really do very well. And one example of something that communities have that will, where they do really well, is they have some core of people who are super users of the community. And they may or may not be in a formal leadership role within the community. And they may or may not, you know, if the community is one where there's a paid membership and the membership payments are there to support the activities of the community, and whoever, you know, if there's an owner of the community, to also support the owner of the community, the super users may or may not be heavy contributors from a financial perspective. But what they are is they're heavy users of the kind of the content and the social interaction. So they do things like check in frequently and consistently. They spend a lot of time communicating frequently with others in the community. They are givers, so they'll create content and share it with others that others can access. An interesting factor that, you know, since they're the frequent users of the community, you know, I talked about the culture of the community being important. One of the things that super users will do is they will help to police the community and ensure that the cultural norms that strengthen the group end up getting enforced. You know, so if you have somebody who is, if one of the requirements of being in the community is that you have to show up on a regular basis, they may be some of the people who will call out people who are not showing up. Or if one of the cultural norms is you need to spend more time listening than talking, if there are people who abuse that and talk way too much, they may call that out. They also generally have a two-way relationship with the community writ large itself, providing feedback and suggestions to help make the community better. So they're good at listening to what's going on kind of at the ground level and helping the people who are responsible for facilitating or leading make pivots or changes in how the community runs that will help it do a better job of providing benefits to the members. They're in a position where they demonstrate genuine desire to help other members. Again, whether or not they're big financial contributors, they really do want to help other members. They're in a great position to attract new members. This goes back to the issue of whether the membership is open or closed, but super users are really kind of pivotal in being part of the marketing engine of the community to keep it ongoing. And since they're so involved and so much a part of the culture of the community, they will generally be best at aiding in the onboarding in new members. In conclusion, what I would say is, if you want to get started either on joining a community or starting one, be really clear on who the target member is for the community, particularly if you're trying to start a community. Make sure that there's really good alignment between the actual benefits that the community provides and what the target member needs. You've got to create awareness of what the community offers, right? So there has to be some way of marketing what this community is all about. And you have to have a way to create engagement, particularly early on. You don't want to lose people when they're first trying something out and they're a little unsure of what to do. I mentioned having a trial is important, and having some kind of membership requirement is important. There are also ways you can reward loyal members because they help build the long-term success of the community. And there are also ways to reward increasing engagement of people, which again helps strengthen the sense of community, what the community has to offer. And lastly, people who are in the community, as I mentioned, are great referral sources for new members. So keep that in mind. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter to continue the discussion. And please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. Come back and listen to our next episode as we explore how to pick the people that will help you smash the plateau. My guest, serial entrepreneur and angel investor Dan Cushell, talks about the concepts behind the Genius Network and how being with the right people can make all the difference. It's an episode you won't want to miss. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.